decentralized energy solutions are absolutely critical when it comes to unlocking flexibility, creating novel business models, and promoting the advancement of e-mobility. And today, we can consider e-mobility being the hub or the meeting point of electric vehicles, smart charging, and grid flexibility. So it's an exciting hub of innovation taking place with a view to the future energy system. You could say that the landscape is undergoing deep transformation. And if there's someone who understands deep transformation and this kind of landscape, someone who is technically fluent, as well as strategically ambitious, it's Dr. Herbert Dess, who is chairman of the board of the Mobility House. Welcome, Herbert. What a pleasure.
Thank you for inviting, Pamela.
Well, let's dive in. So, why do you believe that decentralized systems are actually going to solve many of the challenges in our energy transition?
Actually, you know, the logic that we need storage comes mostly because of this cheap renewable energy. And what's really driving the transition is the ever lower cost of solar panels and ever lower cost of solar energy. So we have, even in Germany now, we have through the summer basically 3, 4, 5 hours where energy is at the cost of zero, you know, because the panels are installed, so they just produce. And to make use of this really, really cheap energy, what you need is storage. And then comes this idea of using the... most of the storage we have currently, battery storage, is in cars. Now we have about 2 million cars in Germany, many more around the world. And if you think about cars, it really comes to your mind to make use of this, because cars are only used 1 hour per day. So you have this car standing around 23 hours doing nothing. And then you have this huge battery in a car. Now, and many people underestimate that a car battery can feed a house for probably a fortnight, not 10 days, 15 days. It's a lot of energy in this car. And then comes the next point, that this battery is totally underused, because people know this battery is for 400, 500 kilometers, 100 kilowatt hours, and people drive only 30 on average. No, in Europe, in China, it's even less. So you have this totally underused asset of a battery, and the only thing you have to do is basically plug in into the energy system, yeah, and then you can shift the energy from daylight, from sun, from cheap into expensive, 6 o'clock in the evening when everybody comes home and the sun is not shining anymore. So this idea has been around for 15 years, and everyone thought, wow, this is great, because at the end, it totally changes the perception of a car, no? Because a car is not anymore a consumer of energy. It's part of the energy system, of a hugely distributed energy system. And the amount of storage is huge if you aggregate the cars. So this idea has been around for 15 years. Mobility House was one of the companies which first took this idea. It took now 15 years to make it happen. But now it's really happening. Now, and you've seen probably out there, there's a Renault 5. It's the first car worldwide where the customer can change an energy contract and use bidirectional charging device and provide storage to the network. And the outcome is that the customer gets about 10,000, 11,000 kilometers of free drive, so it doesn't cost any more to drive a car. And the other advantage is that you can, in the networks, no, potentially this growing to from 1,000 to 100,000 cars, you can put much more renewable equals cheap energy into the system, and you need less of grid extension. So it's really, I would say, a wonder formula. This is also why I'm really committed to this, and I'm spending a lot of time, because it's a big changer. It's a big driver of change.
It seems to make sense. It seems to be a smart solution that makes good business sense. Is everyone on your page? Is everybody singing off of the same hymn sheet?
No.
And if not, how do we change the perception?
Yeah, you know, there's always, if such a transition happens, there are people who are going to lose out, no? And there are established energy companies who, they don't want the price of energy to come down a lot, no? There are network companies, they mostly want to invest in network expansion, no? To add more. And then the other thing, it's complex, no? Because then there is this owner of the batteries concerned about the warranty. You have the OEM, the provider of the warranty. It's a complex system. You have to combine it with trading. So there are quite a few hurdles to really bring it to life. But at the end, the benefit is basically for everyone. No, it incentivizes driving electric cars, which is good for environment, good for reducing emissions. It doesn't require any taxpayer money. No, it's just you set the rules and then the market works it out. It drives energy costs down. It drives cost of grid extension down. So it's fantastic, but to introduce it is difficult. Yeah, and you see it took 15 years and it's only now starting.
I know that you've been a proponent of e-mobility for many years, even from your Volkswagen days. Why does it hold so much promise now?
E-mobility, you mean? Or
yes.
Yeah.
E-mobility.
Yeah, you know, I think it's also, and you mentioned that now, if you have such a step change or transition on the horizon, there are many companies, even societies, let's say, economic systems losing out. And for instance, take Germany. Now we have a very well established premium car industry and suppliers which are really strong in injection equipment, in diesel, gasoline engine development. And this transition means a lot of change for them. No? So I think it's you will always find a lot of resistance, people asking for a longer time span to make money out of the existing business. But this transition is on the way now. It's mostly driven by China. Electric cars, they are already cheaper than gasoline cars. There's no way to stop this. You still can slow it down, but I think it's done because most of it is driven by energy prices. Think about now, and here on the show, you see a lot of solar installations. If you have your own solar installation on the roof, and even if it's in the northern part of Germany or Holland or so, you would produce your solar energy at about 5-6 cents per kilowatt hour. And because solar has become so cheap, and a car consumes 20 kilowatt hours per 100 kilometer, no? So that makes €1 per 100 kilometer as energy cost, which is one tenth of what it costs to refuel with diesel or with gasoline. There's no way to stop this. And those 5 cents in your own installation, you can buy energy if you have a flexible energy tariff, and if you can charge at lower prices, you can buy energy around this price. So this is, I would say, unstoppable, and also mostly because China is really committed to it and is driving scale, internal scale, and driving the cost of the components of batteries and systems down. So I think it can be slowed down by policies like in America or probably in Germany, but you can't stop it.
I'm glad you mentioned policy, because I was going to say, as China literally races ahead, is policy keeping up with these trends? And
yeah,
in terms of keeping Europe competitive?
Yeah, I think, you know, probably many, some 10 years, this started 10, 12 years ago, and probably many people underestimated Germany. At the end, no, they were, if we look at those three regions, US, Europe, and China, there were huge commitments to this energy transition. No? The European plan for energy transition, which, let's say, basically put hundreds of millions into this sector of incentives, and then the big American plan. And I think the target never was in none of those constituencies, no, US, China, and Europe, never was just to save the world. No, the idea behind was always we create an industry which then sells the technology to the rest of the world. Now, I think this was in everybody's mind then. But what people underestimated, that China really took it serious right from the start. No, and China even then accelerated more than they thought. In China, the regulation meant that by 2030 there should be 50% of electric or so-called new energy vehicles, 50% of plug-in hybrids and electric cars. They achieved that target 6 years early. No,
wow.
So it accelerated so much. Also, the drive down of cost of solar went so fast. Battery happening is the same now. It's 25% price reduction only last year. Though the system there is kind of self-accelerating, and the transition into non-fossil is so fast in China that their fossil energy bill already comes down. No, they already have peaked CO2 this year. They only committed 2030. It goes so fast, and I think many people in the Western world underestimated that China would take it so seriously. Maybe in hindsight, we will say in I don't know, 10 or 20 years' time, that China really stopped climate change. Yeah? Because they are the biggest emitter, yeah, or they have been the biggest emitter, but they're also doing much more than the rest of the world to stop it. And taking solar, no, they are the biggest producer, but 60% of solar capacity last year and this year will be installed in China.
Yeah? Wow. It seems as if we can learn some lessons from China, perhaps, as a growing electrostate. But I want to pivot slightly and focus on the mobility house for a moment. Tell us a little bit more about that and your role as chairman of the board.
I've been asked to join this company. I knew this company since the early days. It's a Munich startup, always with this wonderful idea. In its key targets, not to make driving zero, they called it, no, zero emissions, zero cost for the driver. And I would say 10, 15 years ago, you wouldn't believe that, no. But now we are really close to, let's say, a kind of a scaling period, no. But I think it's going to happen now, next year. We had a very important decision. 3 days ago in the German parliament, which set new rules for this game, because there was this double taxation of storage in cars, which is now going to be taken away towards the end of the year. And this will generate now, I would say, a huge scale. And as this is really complex, because you need to understand what the customer needs, what the car manufacturer requires. You have to understand energy system. You have to understand renewable a little bit. So it's complex. And I thought that, as I've been asked by the team, that I really could help there, no, because I have still close ties into the automotive world and also in the a little bit less, but also in the energy world. So I think I can help there, also politically intermediating, and I think we can do something really significant for the energy transition.
Amazing.
Which is a thing I'm driving by heart. Yeah.
I was obviously doing some research on you before we had this conversation, and I just want to read a quote to those who are listening. You said, "The ban on internal combustion engines is not the problem, but the hesitation about future technologies is." And I love that, because, you know, it might not actually come down to whether or not it's a technology issue, but maybe the future really could be hindered by us. Do you want to comment on that for us?
I can, you know, and you know, the last three, I can't remember the name, but the Nobel Prize winners put that really once again into perspective, that what's really hindering change is this creative destruction, as Schumpeter calls it. What's really hindering that is established companies, now big companies, because they have a lot to lose, and they are big, and they have a say, and they are opinion makers, now, and so you have to expect that the established companies will try to slow down change as much as possible. You have to expect that, because at the end, no, they have a very strong position now, they have a competitive edge. which in the new world they only have to develop. Yeah? So for them, it's this change is a risk. The companies to really bet on are the startups. They have nothing to lose, and they're going to make and drive the change. So, and as the established industry normally in any economy has a big say still, so you would expect that where you have strong industries today, change is probably being slowed down a little bit, which we're experiencing now.
Indeed, indeed. I'm also going to quote you one more time. You once said, the future of the car is individual, sustainable, and intelligent.
Yeah.
How far are we from that?
You know, that's kind of a phrase you could probably read everywhere. But, you know, I'm thinking the car has a really a bright future, also the industry, because if you think about it, now it's becoming part of the energy system, helping the energy system in the transition, no, because of the storage, usage of the storage, the energy consumed by the car will be really renewable, green energy, whenever it's cheap. So no emissions anymore, yeah, CO2-free energy, and then a trend which is probably not here the theme, but it's going to happen also at a very fast pace, is that cars becoming incredibly safe. Now, still, 1 million people die in car accidents per year worldwide. Quite stable. Yeah, it doesn't improve a lot over the past 10 years. And this is going to change dramatically with the introduction now of autonomous driving and the sensoric capabilities of the cars, which are already growing year by year, and the autonomous cars driving now in the US and in China are about 10 times safer as a manual driver. So you would assume that in 5, maximum 10 years' time, there will be a huge reduction in car incidents. And this is why I'm saying, you know, you have this device, which is individual still, it's emission free, yeah, it's basically also safe, very safe, not compared to today, probably 100 times safer. So why would you give it up? Yeah. What would be the reason? Today it's different. No, today we have car accidents, we have congestion, we have emissions, but that's going to change. The car will lose a lot of its negatives. And this is why I think it has a great future.
Yeah. I love that future outlook that you have. It's innovative, it's positive. And I can tell you, I'm from South Africa, and driving on South African roads makes me really long for the days ahead when driving is safer and cars do their own thing.
It's a dangerous place.
Indeed. Before we conclude, do you have any last thoughts that you'd like to share about the sector and the way it's moving? Is that something you'd like to emphasize for our listeners?
I'm really excited about this merger of mobility and energy of this sector, no? Because it opens a lot of new opportunities, and it's very hard to predict. You know, even if you think about the car, it's very hard to predict who is going to sell the energy to the car. No, is it the utilities, which today are doing it? Will it be those kind of new startup solar home-based utilities like Octopus you have seen out there and many of the competitors? Will it be the OEMs, the car manufacturers, no, which have access to the customer and they could sell the energy? So it's opening up a totally new world, and the two sectors have to work closer together, and that's for me is very exciting. Also to learn from the other sectors. So I'm really looking forward, and I think also this venue here, the fair, is a place where this discussion happens. Yeah.
Indeed. It's a space to watch. It's really exciting.
Yeah.
And that's why I think conversations like these should happen more often. Herbert Diss, it has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Pamela.
And thank you to everybody who's listened in today. Please do subscribe to the podcast for more conversations like these. And we will see you on the floor. Thank you.